Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Finding Annie. This week's episode is called The Ruling Class. Bum, bum, bum. It is all about education and the education system in England and the UK and how it trickles down and affects the entire of society. It's a little exploration with the help of the most wonderful guest, Jess Phillips. But as always, we will start with a memory. And this week's one is pretty gross and pretty shameful. I'm going to hand over to Shauna, my friend from university.
Annie, do you remember our landlord at university? Oh my God, there was a big house. There was six girls. And we used to have these mental parties. We'd plan for the parties for months and have big themes and invite half of Belfast. And the house would be mental. One time when we had the party, the next day, really early in the morning, who arrives at the door? Oh my God, it's the landlord. Wear gold shoes on, knocking away at the door. No one answered, obviously. We were all in hiding. So doesn't she come in? Oh God, we all heard the key opening. We didn't know where to go. She couldn't get past the bottles of vodka and the cans of beer and cigarette stubs and records. And oh my God, the place was carnage. It was absolutely nuts. And we would hear her coming up the stairs. She'd be looking for us. There'd be no one in the house. And all these randomers lying about the place. And then I think someone left a present in the bath as well, which wasn't the nicest present to leave. Especially for your landlord, seeing a poo in the bath. That was not... that was horrific. That was horrific getting that visitor the next day after one of the parties. Oh my God.
Thank you so much to Shauna there for helping me relive something that I had conveniently and maybe deliberately forgotten, which was the poo in the bath gate and my landlord coming and finding us the next morning. I mean, that is, I have my head in my hands. That's all I can say. I am appalled. Absolutely appalled at our behaviour in that house. Fucking hell. So that was a huge part of my university life, right? The parties, the fun, the clubbing, the madness, the late night poker, which you've heard about in previous episodes. There was other, obviously, aspects to my education, which was education. And I had really, really amazing lessons and tutors and kind of courses in uni. I did English Lit and I studied everything from Irvin Welsh novels to, Francis Ford Coppola, Apocalypse Now. I wrote my own book of poems for a part of a lesson, which I loved. So really fond memories of my learning in university. Before uni, I went to a fee-paying boarding school in South Dublin called Wesley College. We lived in a housing estate right behind it. We were the first people to move into this housing estate and our back garden backed onto the basketball courts of the school. And every morning, my brothers and sister and I would trudge over the back wall to go to school. I just actually rang my mum because I can't fully remember how it all worked. But my mum said she wanted us to go to a free school, but my dad was determined for us to go to this fee-paying school. And he was the one earning the main income, so that was his decision in terms of his money. And he did. And it's important to say that private school in Ireland is nowhere near the levels of fees that it is in the UK. It is, in the UK, you pay 20 to 30, sometimes even £40,000 a year to go to one of those kind of elite boarding schools. For us, it was more like three £1,000. And then when there was more people in the school from the same family, you get bigger discounts. So it wasn't too stupidly expensive. But it was still expensive, you know, rather than paying nothing at all. We always had to work. Both my mum and my dad were very insistent on that. And from the age of 15, I was working in a local hardware store in my holidays, the same store that my brothers and sister, I think, all worked in. I basically just copied them, being the youngest in the family. But yeah, I loved school and I had really fond memories of school, and it was a great school and I was so lucky and privileged to go there. You know, I was in the choir, I was in the school play, I played hockey. Significantly, I was part of a dance troupe that did a dance routine to a rave version of the Cranberry Zombie at the Dublin National Concert Hall. That was a proud moment. I did a German exchange program, did all of that stuff. So loved school. And that was my kind of experiences of private school in Ireland. Private school in the UK, in what I'm learning about, and I'm kind of been looking into it a lot recently, it feels more, way more exaggerated and extreme. Probably because, as I mentioned, it's so much more expensive to go there. 20 to 30,000 pounds a year, sometimes even 40. One in 15 people in Britain was educated in a private school. And the educational charity Sutton Trust has found that 65% of all judges, 59% of state secretaries and 29% of lawmakers were educated at an elite school. Probably the most well-known school of all those kind of elite boarding schools is Eton College. So Eton is a boarding school for boys. It's near Windsor. The daily kind of uniform you have to wear seems to be black tie. It's like waistcoats and tails. You have to wear a white bow tie. It's where the royals went, and it has produced a huge number of statesmen, military heroes, Nobel laureates, gold medal winners, Oscar recipients. 20 prime ministers went to Eton. Obviously, it's not all Conservative Party members. Tony Blair went to an elite boarding school in Scotland called FETS, or FETS, I don't know how you pronounce it. Jeremy Corbyn also went to a private school. So it's not just the Tories, it's the entire British government seems to be very much overrun by the products of this kind of elite boarding school system. In fact, everything decision made over the last 20 years, if you include Tony Blair and David Cameron, it has been made by people who went to these schools. So it's really interesting to look into what it is about these schools that produces all these people. Or is it the system around it that produces it? Boris Johnson's own sister says that it is a system that underpins almost all that is wrong with British society. She is among the many people who believe that the private school system should be broken up. I've been reading this amazing article in Der Spiegel by a guy called Jörg Schindler. He says of the private school system that it's an archaic system that teaches those who belong to it that they are destined for the kind of greatness that others cannot reach. It is a system that teaches the preservation and exercise of power, but is also one in which the shrewd and cunning, but not necessarily the best, rise to the top. In its eagerness to produce a ruling elite, the system has also done lasting damage to the psyches of many of the children who have passed through it. I'm really interested in the psychological effects of going to a school like this that kind of promotes success at all times and promotes the idea of entitlement. And also that takes you away from your family at 13 years old and kind of puts you in this kind of stringent system of rules and hierarchy. You are taught like self-confidence, you are taught eloquence, how to speak properly and what to do and behave in the various situations you're going to be in. You're taught how to come across as charismatic and charming. But it's the emotional thing that's interesting because doesn't seem to be much emphasis put on how to deal with your own feelings or those of others. Nick Duffel, who's a psychotherapist and has looked into this, quotes, "Their inner child is locked away and they quickly become pseudo-adults. That is why many of them seem so boyish. Essentially, Britain is being run by children in adult bodies for whom politics is little more than a fascinating game." Now, one person I've heard say this a lot, in terms of accusing politicians of treating their politics like a game is Jess Phillips. And she is our guest in the podcast today. And she is a Labour Party member for Birmingham Yardley, has been an MP since 2015. And I have come across her just by watching the news and, you know, being online and seeing clips of her, which have become viral. And the reason why they've become viral is because Jess Phillips doesn't speak the language of Westminster, which is this very kind of eloquent and precise way of talking and addressing each other in the room. She does have to say things a certain way because that's the rules, but it sounds foreign on her tongue. And she sticks out because she is so normal sounding. Her voice is accented regionally. It is not affected. She is speaking totally, it seems like from a very honest and human place. She shows that she is emotionally attached to the words that are coming out of her mouth. And that always struck me with her, you know, compared to a lot of other people in that room who there's a lot of guffawing and kind of one-upmanship and slagging people off and shouting and finger-pointing and eye-rolling. Jess Phillips seems to really feel the pain of her constituents and want to kind of convey that in the room. And she seems to not be able to help herself do it. So she is our guest on today's podcast. And I really was interested in her take on Westminster. And again, I don't just mean the ruling party. I mean the whole environment of that place and the kind of way people speak to each other and the way that kind of trickles down and the way policies and our politics and our society are affected by this kind of ruling class as such. Before we get into it, I have to tell you the other thing that I learnt in the research for this that blew my tiny mind, which was that Eton College made £51 million from fees in the year 2017 and 2018. But they are not taxed on these fees because they are a charity. Now, all these elite boarding schools are given charity status by the government. Compare this to state schools, who are massively underfunded to the point of not being able to open 5 days a week. Jess Phillips famously sent her kid to the steps of 10 Downing Street to do his homework as a kind of protest against the fact that her kid's school isn't going to be able to open 5 days a week because it's not got enough money. There are 66,000 more children in state schools this year than last, but 10,800 fewer staff, including 5,000 fewer teachers and 2,500 fewer teaching assistants. Nearly a third of schools, according to the National Governors Association, are already in deficit. So it feels like a deeply, deeply unequal situation, this education system. And that's one system that is kind of affected by the British government. But I thought it was interesting to pinpoint that one because it's an education system that's deeply imbalanced and unequal. And it's all a result of the education system is kind of coming full circle. So the people coming out of these elite boarding schools are making the decisions that perpetuate this unequal system of education. So yeah, it's a fascinating topic to me. It's something I don't know a lot about and I would like to know more. And Jess Phillips is the one to talk to. I was delighted she had the time to chat to us. She's got a book out called Truth to Power, which is all about speaking out against wrongdoings and not being afraid to do that, and just activism at large. And she's one of those people who seems very, very fearless when it comes to this stuff and is loved all over the UK for her kind of fearlessness and her approach, which is hugely human and empathetic. I went to Portcullis House, which is part of Westminster, to her office on Monday morning, this Monday morning. Or was it Tuesday? Maybe it was Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. to see her. It was her last day as an MP because obviously she is now in the process of campaigning to try and keep her seat at Birmingham Yardley because Boris Johnson has called an election. So It felt like quite an exciting day because she was kind of on her last day of being an MP and about to embark in this kind of campaign. And she was in amazing form. She'd been out last night, the night before, drinking, and was in just was a bit tired and delirious. But it made for an amazing conversation. I'm excited for you to hear. So please enter the podcast, Jess Phillips. Okay, so here we are in Portcullis House, which is very exciting to me. I am in the office of Jess Phillips, who is MP for one more day.
One more day.
There's a song in that. MP for one more day. What is that? You know that song?
I don't think that MP for one more day is a song. It might be.
I always just sing things that remind me of things. Okay, so how does it feel to have your MP-ness? Clearly, I'm not massively political, Jess, so you're going to have to teach me a lot.
Yes, my status as an MP.
Yes, kind of ending soon, potentially.
Yeah. It feels, there's a mixture of feelings, a sort of terror.
Yeah.
I feel a bit calm.
And you seem well chilled.
I mean, I feel a bit calm and I feel a bit anxious that I feel calm. I've basically sort of gone a bit meta and I've gone inside myself. I feel quite calm about the election because when your job is basically taking risks and you know it's not forever and you know what the chances are in your whole career of things wildly changing, and you're attracted to that sort of thing. MPs are attracted to essentially what is a risky business. At the moment, it's like when you're waiting for a tragedy to happen or you're waiting for someone to get ill or you convince yourself you've got a brain tumour. Mm. The anticipation is always worse than the event. And so the anticipation, I'm in this sort of calm state now because this is the life I entered into and it's the one I've got. And now, you know, I know what to do in an election, so I just face it down. Yeah, face it down. I'll do everything I can. And you get a bit sort of que sera sera. There is definitely a song about that.
I won't. Being Irish, it brings me back to the World Cup days.
And you get a bit of que sera sera about it, you know. Yeah. I'll do my best, but whatever will be. So I feel quite calm.
Do you think you'll win?
I think I'll probably win in my constituency, although there's no such thing as a dead cert. We've seen people with 22,000 majorities overturned in by-elections or in the last election. So I've got a 17,000 majority. And I'm not getting any sense from the people of Birmingham Yardley that they're really annoyed with me. Mm-hmm. I think they are quite annoyed with, in a four-year period, having to say three times that they would like me to be their Member of Parliament. I think they're a bit like, how many times do we need to tell you? Mm-hmm. We pick her. Stop asking us. Mm-hmm. They're a bit like, gosh, we have to have another election. I'm not feeling a great sense of a desire for an election.
No.
And also, it's going to be cold, isn't it?
Yeah. I've been reading your book, Truth to Power, and really enjoying it. And I wanted to speak to you today about the power system that you may know the most, I'm presuming you do, which is the kind of system of the elite in the British government.
Yeah.
How many people can you just reel off now that you know went to Eton, that you work with in Westminster?
Absolutely loads.
Well, no.
I mean, so Boris Johnson, Jacob Rees-Mogg, I think Oliver Dowden went. There's this whole ridiculous thing that they do in Parliament that I didn't understand and had to literally Google whilst I was sat in front of them. There's something called Wickhamism, Wickhamists. They're like, oh, God. You would say that you're a Wickhamist. And I think that means you went to Winchester School.
Oh, my God, there's an actual word.
There's an actual word. And they're like, there's a word for Eton as well, but I can't remember what that is. Wickhamists sounded like they were witches or something. So I was like, oh, he's accusing him of being a witch. But I mean, so just as an example, yesterday we had the speakership election and every single person who stood for speaker had been to a private school. I mean, not Eton, but every single person. I think that the percentage of people in this building who went to private school is, I think in the country it's 7%. In here, I'm not entirely sure what it is, but definitely over a third.
Yeah.
There's more people who went to private school than there are women.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you became an MP in 2015, how did you feel about the kind of people that were here? You know, did you feel like imposter syndrome because of these people being...
I felt imposter syndrome. The whole building, I mean, we're in Port Callisto, which is the sort of more modern bit of the building. The whole building is so historic, the old bit of the building. And it's designed to crush you a little bit, which I think is good in some ways. Because anyone who comes here thinking they're the big I am is a bit like, actually, dude, the people who went before you, they were probably a bit better than you. And so there is that element where the building sort of crushes you. And I did feel like I didn't understand the language. I don't understand, like yesterday they did this thing where after they elect a speaker, they have to be dragged to the seat. It's based on some 16th century. I don't even know what it is. It's ridiculous. But, I mean, they couldn't have designed something that made people feel more like they were in a sort of public school Bunty novel than watching somebody being dragged into a seat and then given a wig and a gavel and stuff. Like, it's just, like, ridiculous.
It's so strange, isn't it? When you look at it from, like, an outside perspective and kind of take away the ideas of tradition, it's like... what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, well, a lot of it.
What's that knocking
Speaker
thing?
Speaker Burko, John Burko, he took away the wigs and he took away some of the stuff that seemed a bit, like, made it seem a bit otherworldly.
Yeah.
Was keeping a lot of the traditions. And I don't mind some of the traditions now. I just ignore them. I don't partake in them ever. Yeah. So I don't, like, do the procession when the Queen comes in and, like, go and follow her. I just stay at home on that day.
Yeah.
Because, like, I can watch it on the telly and get a better view.
Yeah,
it's a bit like all sporting events. And so, I don't do all the sort of fancy stuff. You don't have to do it.
The
and
ritual,
actually, that it is removed. But the people, what I found when I came here was that I have met people that I not just had never met people like this. I had never imagined the existence of people. There are people in here who are... so it's not even posh is to underestimate. They come from an actually different world to the one I come from. Now, what I found was when I came here, some of it made me feel like, I remember being walking behind two lords and they were talking just like a week after I got here and they were talking about another new MP, a Tory man MP. I can't even remember who it was, but they were like, let's just say his surname was Phillips for the sake of this anecdote. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, is he of the Norfolk Phillips? And I was thinking, which am I of? Like, you know, would anybody say, oh, they're of the Birmingham. Like, there are families.
God.
It's like being in Pride and Prejudice.
Wow.
I remember just, but to be honest, I didn't find that gave me imposter syndrome. It made me feel like I belonged to him more.
Yeah.
Because this is meant to be for the people. This is the House of Commons, and I am definitely a bit common. Mm. And so.
But you shine like a fucking beacon. That's the thing. Like, this is the thing about you, is that you shine like a beacon out of here because of that, because you speak like a normal person. And it feels like the most obvious thing in the world, but when it's not until I heard you speak in that context that I realized that no one else was doing it.
I just talk with a regional accent.
Speaking like a normal person on the street,
and I get things wrong all the time, and I admit that I get things wrong. So when I'm speaking in the Commons, I constantly am like, oh, hang on, and I'll turn to the speaker and say, am I doing this right? Because I don't know. I don't know. Like the other day I said my own name. When you're not allowed to say names in the House of Commons, you have to say the member for X, Y, and Z. And I was like, so I said, I was quoting somebody else who was talking to me, and I said, oh, and they said this, that, and the other, Jess. And then I said, oh God, am I allowed to say my own name? And they were like, yeah, you can say your own name. How ridiculous to have to ask if I'm allowed to say my own name at work. I'm a 38-year-old mother of two. I'll say my own name if
it's
I want
mad,
to.
It's mad, isn't it?
But what I did find, so I didn't feel like an imposter because of that. But what I did find, weirdly, is that I met people from a world I didn't really, couldn't have imagined and had only vilified. And some of them were brilliant and exceptional and kind. Mm. And I actually had to look inside myself and address some of the intolerances that I potentially had because they're the toffs. And like a really good example is he's Churchill's grandson, Nicholas Soames. He just resigned from Parliament. He's standing down after 30 years here. Now, he's Churchill's grandson. I mean, my granddad was a gardener and at a local school, and the other one worked in a car factory like everybody. So, you know, not Churchill. although I'm going to say maybe just as good.
Yeah.
And his family owned like country piles. His even on his mother's side, his father's side, his mother was Churchill's daughter. Is that, you know, they've got like houses and stuff, like they own land. And you know, I would have definitely thought, ugh, he's going to be intolerable. And and he was kind and progressive and wanted to see the world change just as much as I did. We just had a different way of thinking that that might happen. And I did have to try and sort of change my own attitude, because you have to pull together in a direction with some of these people, otherwise you can't change things. But yeah, then there is a lot of really toughy people. One woman in the Conservative Party, she'll remain nameless.
I wish you could see Jess right now, by the way. Her palm went up.
And she was like, oh, you live in Birmingham? And I said, yeah. And she's like, God, why would you do that? And I was just like, it's because I love it and it's where I come from and it's better than you. And she's just like, ugh, you don't have to live there, you know. Nobody will know if you don't bother. And I was just like, you're a disgusting human being. Yeah.
I read this amazing article in The Spectator yesterday, because I was kind of researching about Eton and those schools and the people that come from there. 20 prime ministers from Eton.
Oh, yeah, 20 prime. None from my school.
Yeah. Not yet, babe. Not yet, Jess. But I was reading about the psychological ramifications of going there, because it's interesting you talk about how people from there, you know, it's so easy to hate on these people because they're kind of caricatured. They're like evil villains. Like Jacob Rees-Mogg is like someone off a film that someone's made up.
Yeah.
But the kind of psychological effects of going to a boarding school like that, leaving your parents at quite a young age, this kind of bullying system. And there's a famous psychotherapist, I'll read you the quote, who talks about this kind of pseudo, he says, Nick Duffel is his name, their inner child is locked away and they quickly become pseudo adults. That is why so many of them seem boyish, because they don't get a chance to be children, because they have to kind of go immediately into this weird adult system. He says, essentially, Britain is being run by children in adult bodies for whom politics is little more than a fascinating game. That really rung true with the stuff I've seen you say with regards to Boris and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, both Cameron and Boris Johnson, they're cut from a very similar cloth, although they would probably argue differently. But both of them, Cameron, his upbringing, you know, when I was a kid, I said I wanted to be the Prime Minister, and people were like, oh, isn't that charming? Like, bless her. Like, and when Cameron was a child and he said, I want to be the Prime Minister, you know, oil companies probably started lobbying him because it was almost certain that that was going to be the case. And it feels like their passage through life has been so very greased, so very easy, that they can take a chance on the lives of other people because it will never affect them. And they don't understand that risks have consequences. In both Boris Johnson and David Cameron, there is this arrogance that what you want, you get. And nobody in the country has that life experience. Mm. Nobody I grew up with thinks, well, I'm definitely going to make... It's like Del Boy, do you know what I mean? Like, we'll definitely be... Next year, we'll be millionaires. That's just like a joke to most people. And so the way that they govern... And the way that they behaved was, and Boris continues to behave in this manner, is just, it's just drips in entitlement.
Mm.
It is like it is a game. That is the thing that is so alarming, is that within their own tribe, they are playing a game of one-upmanship about, like, they genuinely have concerns over who got to be the hood boy or who got to be the leader of something at Oxford. I don't even know what they're called. And they continued to basically play Billy Big Bollocks whilst meant to be governing the country. And it isn't a game. They don't understand that the personal is political. They don't understand that, because no policy that has ever existed actually affected their lives, either good or bad. Mm. So they never needed a sure start centre, and they never they never had to worry about whether the local school was any good for their children or for themselves. Mm. And they never had to worry that if they needed an operation and it was going to take 3.5 weeks, that they couldn't just pay for it. Mm. And so to them, the idea of the sort of noble idea of coming here to use policy to change people's lives is that they had no concept of what that actually means, because to them, politics is a game.
So the root
to me,
of it.
Yeah, to me, the personal is political.
So it's totally different, the root of how you approach it and they approach it.
Totally because, different, yeah. Because I approach it with pain.
Yeah.
It comes from both pain and desire for hope.
Yeah.
And for them, it comes from desire for power.
And pride.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They cannot understand that politics actually affects people's lives.
It's endemic in terms of, like, even the system of Eton, because, again, this is something that I've only just learned, is that they made £51 million in fees in the year 2018.
Jesus Christ.
And they're a charity.
Oh, yeah, that's ridiculous that they're a charity.
What the fuck? So all schools of, like, Eton's ilk are classified as a charity, so they get tax breaks and they don't pay tax on the £51 million that they make as fees.
And people don't have to pay VAT either or tax on their fees. And you can claim it off your tax.
And then you compare that to a state school, you know, which can't even run for 5 days a week, you know.
Yeah.
So how is that? How is that allowed to be the case?
I was in Birmingham launching one of my colleagues, Preet, in Edgbaston's campaign on Saturday, and it was about education funding. And a woman who had an SEN, so special educational needs, her child had special educational needs, and she stood up and she talked and she said, is there any way that we can get some of the special schools in the city, can we get them charitable status, because then they could be applying for things like a variety bus, because home to school transport is difficult for disabled kids, because often the special school is further away from home because there's not one in every area. And I was just like, do you know what? I cannot believe that this is even a question that we have to ask, because the state should be able to provide it. But also that state schools that have desperate needs in this circumstance cannot access the same grant funding as private schools. And I don't know how many kids with special educational needs there are at Eton, but I'm going to guess not that many. Because you have to take tests to get in now. I once heard one of the Tory MPs who'd gone to Eton complaining that his child might not be able to get in and that it wasn't fair anymore because they had to be clever and pass a test and that they might not be clever enough. And I was just like, oh, shucks, must be tough to be you. The struggle is real. The trouble is that the thing you can't get rid of is the network. You can't get rid of influence without getting rid of that particular system. So the idea that if you went to Eton, you probably go to Oxford or Cambridge and then you probably, you know, just, you know, get a job somewhere. So personally, for me, I would like to see sort of quotas on the amount of people who get into universities, let's say the top universities, the red brick universities and the Oxbridge universities and colleges. I just think that if 7% of the kids in the country go to private school, why don't we say that only 7% of intake at any university can have come from private school? Presumably they'd all get a place then. Mm-hmm. There'd be enough places, but what happens is when I went to university, like half the people in my class had been to a private school, and I was going to study politics and I was imagining it was going to be like batik wall hangings and incense and talking about feminism. And it was like just a sort of classroom and everybody was a Tory. And I was like, oh my God, I don't actually think I'd ever met a Tory before I went to university. Yeah. I just thought that they were something that was talked about like a sort of like a ghoul under the bed. I don't know that I'd ever actually come across one knowingly. So then I was in these politics lectures with a lad from Eton who was in Prince William's class, because I'm the same age as Prince William. And I just was like, oh my God, this is so weird. But we've got to somehow curtail the influence, not just, we've got to curtail the ability for where you were born, what family you were born into, being able to be used to get you like up the ladder a little bit. That is a much harder question, and how we do that. And we've got to, in one regard, it is levelling up the state school sector. Yeah. So my son's school, every year I go in and judge, he goes to the local comprehensive to where we live, and I go in and judge a public speaking competition. Now, I had never done any public speaking until I went to university, and I remember I had to do a presentation, and I genuinely like looked up where to get beta blockers from the internet because I was so nervous. Yeah. Whereas that's the kind of thing that they've been doing in the private school system.
From 13. Yes,
from very young.
Yeah.
And so we need to be giving young people all sorts of different tools about confidence, because it's a confidence trick is what Eton teaches you.
But also they're not taught any sort of emotional compassion. So you feel like there's a lot of kind of the people in charge, you know, you're saying about that kind of basic human empathy. They have it, but you don't feel like they feel the pain in the way you do.
Yeah,
even the way you can see that when you talk in Parliament, you can see that
I feel pain. Yeah,
there's pain.
I suppose the difference between even just the Labour Party and the Conservative Party is that the Conservative Party, people often don't realise this, even though they say the word conservative all the time. It literally means to conserve, to conserve the status quo, to keep things the same as they are.
Yeah.
And the Labour Party is a movement born, it had to be invented. It didn't exist. The Conservative Party just exists. It has always existed.
It's systemic.
It has always existed. The Labour Party had to be created because of pain and struggle.
Yeah.
And so when things aren't born out of that pain,
and
they are just there to keep things nice and pretty, like a carriage clock on a shelf, it isn't to sort of smash up the shelf and build something that would be useful. There is this difference where that it's not born out of struggle. And I, you know, I'm sure, you know, David Cameron, a really good example is that, you know, I don't think that bad things never happen to these people. He had disabled son who had died, and he will have felt pain and suffering from that, and wanted to do better for people within that circumstance. But how he managed his policies then was to do better for people in that circumstance who also shared his circumstance. Not people who were poor, not people who were in that situation who now can't get their children into... I mean, one of the biggest things that I handle every day in my constituency is people with kids with special educational needs. Literally, their children are not in school because there is not school places for them. And when they did the nursery legislation under David Cameron, it was basically proven that it would discriminate against children with disabilities. So his pain and struggle was through his eyes. And you've got to be able to understand that other people exist, people who are not like you. I suppose what I started by saying was that I recognised when I got here that there were people who were not like me, and I had to learn about my own. I just wish that they didn't think that they were the default experience. Boris Johnson and David Cameron think that they are the default experience, and literally anyone's ever met anyone like them.
They're clever people. That's the thing. Boris is a clever person. He's academically super gifted. But, you know, in Eton again, I learned how does he not know? He must be clever enough to know. That's the thing about the elite, right? There's few of them. How are there's so few of them, and there's so many of everyone else. How does everyone else not just win?
I actually think that there is a difference between Boris and David Cameron, because I think that David Cameron didn't know but did care a little bit.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson does know that people aren't like him and don't have his...
care.
And he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson cares about Boris Johnson, I'm afraid to say. Boris Johnson, I don't think that... Again, I... No, actually, I can't even say that. I don't think he... I was about to say, I don't think he wants to harm people, but there is literally a recording of him talking about somebody being harmed. I'm not sure that they mind who they harm in their pursuit of their power. It's a game. That's what bothers me, is that they consider people's lives a game. And so Boris Johnson does know that he doesn't understand people's life experience. That, can you imagine if coming from where I come from and the background that I come from and the fact that I'm a woman... Let's just say I had four kids with three different men. I mean, we have terms for that when a woman does it. And there was a recording of me talking about how I wanted to get someone battered from, you know, one of my mates had called me and there'd been something that had gone on, and I was helping them arrange for that person to be harmed, or that I had paid money to keep people quiet on things. There's just absolutely no way I would end up the Prime Minister of this country. Not in a million years. I would be ruled out from day one. And the reason they play the game and they treat it like it's a game is because they always win. Because the deck is stacked and they will always keep on winning. They need to be challenged by people who can be believed in the country and people who can actually reach inside and touch the thing that makes people realise that people like Boris Johnson and David Cameron are not about them. They're not for them, that they're only for themselves. But the way that we build trust as politicians, there's lots of different styles of being a politician. It is not just to agree with everything that every one of your constituents says and to blindly just promise the world. That is the way to build distrust. You have to be honest with your constituents. So when people come in and see me or write emails to me or send me messages on Twitter, and they're like, oh, you should do this, you know, blah, 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 or I don't like what you've done about... You have to be willing to be disliked as well. And people have so much respect if you're willing to be disliked. If you're willing to be like... People write to me every day and say, I don't always agree with you, Bab, but, and you know, I like that you say what you think and I feel like you're one of us. Because we belittle the population all the time as if they can't understand... But they do understand and they see the... if you're a charlatan, they will see right through you. So you, the way that I have tried to do it in my constituency and in the country is just always, sometimes it's painful and embarrassing, dig deep and just be honest and tell the truth. And then people will... They'll hear you out. They won't always agree with you, but they will hear you out when you tell them that Boris Johnson is playing a game with their lives. And Boris Johnson's main flaw is that he is desperate to be adored, like a child who maybe got left by his parents. He needs adoration. And it will be
his
Achilles heel. It will be his undoing that he needs to be adored. And so he will, and I do it as well. You know, we all can suffer from this, especially extroverted people. It means he shows off. It means that when he's not getting it, he'll pull the levers like a class clown. He'll pull the levers he knows works to get the adoration. So if he's going around northern towns as he does and people start being like, please leave my town, as that man said to him in Wakefield, or people are having a pop at him in the street, he will pull the lever that isn't very statesmanlike to get a laugh or be bombastic or to slag off the other side and be really, really, really divisive. And it will always come back badly on him eventually. And it is because he needs to be adored. Boris Johnson should settle and expect nothing more than being respected. Now, the British people, they like Boris Johnson quite a lot, as you see in lots of the polling. I'm not entirely sure they respect him yet, and I don't. I think he's got to earn it, and I think he's incapable because he's too interested in being adored.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Thank you.
Do you still want to be Prime Minister?
I wouldn't mind being the Prime Minister. I think being the leader of a political party looks like an absolute bloody bun fight, doesn't it? I mean, that's the...
Come on, you've got to be leader of Labour, at least.
If I'm going to be the leader of any political party, it would be the Labour Party. But all of the problems, you can put most of the problems that we have had in British politics for the past sort of 10, 15 years down to fractions within political parties. Mm. So David Cameron had to neuter the ERG. Mm. Theresa May became the prisoner of one faction in her party. Yeah. And Boris Johnson now has to keep on throwing them red meat. Mm. And it's very not dissimilar to, the Labour Party, where it's like constant rubbing up of which faction holds the, it's just that seems like a total like a sort of Shakespearean nightmare, being the leader of a political party. Imagine being the Prime Minister. What I cannot bear about Theresa May's premiership and now Boris Johnson's is that both of them spent their time in office. And this is because they come from privilege. They spent their time in office trying to make their office more secure instead of trying to make the offices in the country more secure. Mm. Imagine the amount of power that you would have if you were the Prime Minister of this great country. I literally could come up with 10 things that I would want to change in the first 100 days that would mean that our country, after 10 years of no progress, we've not stepped forward at all to start stepping forward and making things better. I mean, it's just imagine having the power. Mm. So I sit in here all day running, starting campaigns to try and convince people to listen in who have the power to do things. Imagine if you could go, yeah, right, we'll do that. I just cannot even, I don't know how I would behave. I would be a bit like, somebody's got to have a campaign to get me to do this. And then I could just be like, oh no, it's me. Yes, we'll equalise paternity rights with maternity rights men to stay off work. Just as one example, I'd just be like, okay, let's do it. I'd get that. I assume they've got a rubber stamp.
Yeah. It's probably an old like seal.
Like a wax by candlelight. I would just be like, let's do it.
Send it by carrier pigeon out the window of Westminster.
Yeah. I'm sending a crow. So I would,
please be Prime Minister. Come on.
I'm going to make it very Games of Thrones if I ever become the Prime Minister. I'm basically going to, although the women who ruled in that were not always the best leaders.
Yeah, but they were strong characters. They were strong. Which I liked. It was all about them. They weren't second fiddle to people.
That's definitely true. Mm. So, and also by the end, Jon Snow, it's just like, oh God, nobody believes in you anymore. Yeah. You had the opportunity, you missed it.
Imagine watching Game of Thrones with Jess Phillips.
I can't imagine how amazing it would be to try and make things move forward. I watched a video on Twitter yesterday of Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister in New Zealand. She's been the Prime Minister for 2 years and she's given birth in that time as well. Mm. I mean, I didn't wash my hair for a long while after I had a baby. So she's already got a bigger tick than me in that regard. I just didn't leave the house. And it was her first baby as well. Oh, God, the woman must have been in bits. Anyway, and she was given 2 minutes by her team to list all the things that they had changed in the 2 years that they had been in government. And it was, it was to basically if Theresa May had to do it, she'd take up the entire 2 minutes just saying, I did a review and then we had some votes I didn't win. Yeah. And it was just amazing to see that somebody who wants to push things forward. And the Tories will all say, in their defence, they will say, oh, well, we had hung parliaments, so we couldn't do anything. But that is bullshit, I'm afraid to say, because there's no way that if Theresa May, the domestic abuse bill is a really good example, she really wanted it. She launched it like 3 years ago that she was going to do it. And the day before she stood down, it got onto the statute book. So she had like 2.5 years. Crack on. It's not like I was going to vote against it.
Yeah. Why do you take that long?
Why did you take that long? If you'd actually wanted to progress some things, come and talk to us. I'll help you. Mm. I'm not in the business of being tribal if it means women's lives are being saved or children can go to school or men can get the right mental health treatment. I'm right there with you, sister.
Yeah.
But you didn't. Yeah. You spent your entire time solidifying your own position. And that is because they don't understand struggle. They don't understand that things need to actually change, and they're only ever about conserving themselves and conserving power. Down with that sort of thing.
I feel like I'm giving a standing ovation. I'm giving Jess Phillips a standing ovation in her office. Wow, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm a bit hungover as well.
Well, it's working for you.
I mean, maybe I'll do my best work.
So Truth to Power is the book. You're now going to, as of tomorrow, stop being an MP.
You can't use
the head of paper.
You can't come
in the building.
Nope.
So what do you do? You're up in Birmingham, you're door knocking.
Yeah, I'm going to door knock. I'm going to phone bank. We'll be just campaigning, going to all the
How's
schools.
Whiplash?
My whiplash is feeling much better, but I have actually a dangerously high pain threshold. I need to go and properly get a scan and make sure I'm all right, because I was in labour for 8 hours without realising.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I broke my ankle and walked around on it for 6 months.
Jesus.
So because
that is probably some deep psychological reason why you're able to do this job.
This job, I have.
And why you should be Prime Minister.
Incredibly high pain threshold. I'll be doing that. But I'm also going to go around the country and go to seats that are less safe and speak to people in those areas. Because it's not, if you seek to try and be a person who has power in this country, you have to remember that the bit of the country you come from might not be like all the others. And so I'm going to go and listen to people in other areas as well.
So that's a month, pretty much?
You've got four and a half weeks.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best.
Oh, thanks.
I've got no doubt that you'll still be here.
Oh, gosh, I hope the doors open again.
Thank you so much.
No worries.
So good to speak to Jess Phillips. What a woman. If you have anything to say, if you have any reactions, anything that you are have to get off your chest after listening to this conversation, findinganniemack@gmail.com. Hit me up on there. I'd love to hear from you. Or hit us up on Instagram, AnnieMacDJ, on one of our posts with Jess on it. And I was so chuffed to do that episode. I have to say, it was so fun, and just to get her in such good form. And who knows what will happen? As we know with politics at the moment, it's literally ever changing at a terrifyingly rapid pace. So, yeah, who knows what will happen? But a really nice little insight into her situation on Tuesday last. Okay, next week on Finding Annie, our episode is called Eating Animals. And it's something I feel very passionately about. It's something that I have lots of questions about, that I don't know all the facts about, I've read up on. But I'm really, really excited to speak to our guest. His name is Dr. Rupi Ollier, or Dr. Rupi, as he's most commonly known. And he is a GP, an NHS GP, who started a thing called the Doctor's Kitchen, which is a project to inspire patients about the beauty of food and the medicinal effects of eating well. So he kind of comes at food from a medical perspective. He knows everything there is to know about food and the facts behind food and whether it's good for you and bad for you and how it affects you. And I'm particularly interested in speaking to him about meat and eating meat. And he's also had his own medical problems over the years that he has had to kind of work through and figure out. So he's got a really amazing story that I'm looking forward to hearing about. So I can't wait for you to hear next week's episode. I'm going to see you then. Finding Annie next week, all based on eating animals. Have a wonderful week, everyone. See you next week.